Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is May 6th, 2021, and I'm your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Should You Be Going Mobile to Treat Acute Ischemic Strokes? And our guest skeptic is Dr. Daniel Sherwin. Daniel completed his residency training in emergency medicine and fellowship in emergency medicine services at Mercy Health St. Vincent Medical Center in Toledo, Ohio. He remained at Mercy Health St. Vincent as a core faculty member and worked to create the Northwest Ohio EMS Consortium that brought together over 60 EMS and fire agencies that included Mercy Health Life Flight, Mobile Life, Critical Care Transport Service, and assisted in starting the Mobile Stroke Unit. After returning to South Carolina, he is employed with Prisma Health Upstate as a clinical assistant professor, emergency medicine director for emergency medicine services, and medical director for several local EMS agencies, and has lectured on pre-hospital stroke management. Welcome to the SGEM, Daniel.
Thanks, Ken, for allowing me to join you and help contribute with a little bit of knowledge that I have on the pre-hospital treatment of stroke patients.
Oh, I like that. A little bit of a knowledge. It took me like 5 minutes just to get through your intro because you've got so much background in this world. And you know, I just want to warn you, by coming on the SGEM, you may get labeled a non-expert EMS contrarian.
Ken, I think I've been called a lot of things in my life, and I guess I'll just have to add this to the list of the top accolades of being an emergency medicine and EMS physician.
Well, that's a good way to look at it. So why don't you start this podcast off with a case?
All right. So we have a 70-year-old man developed sudden right-sided weakness beginning shortly after breakfast, and his partner appropriately calls emergency medical services. Their local EMS service arrives quickly with a conventional ambulance. He has heard about the special ambulance with CT scanners and wonders if that will make an important difference for his partner.
We've discussed stroke so many times on the SGEM. It's got to be one of the five most popular topics that we've covered, like TXA, PE, POCUS, and ketamine. Now, Justin Morgenstern from First 10 EM and I recently downgraded the NNT website recommendation for TPA in acute ischemic stroke to yellow. And a yellow recommendation means the benefits and harms are unclear due to the uncertainty in the data. But something that often comes up when discussing stroke treatment is we need to go fast because time is brain.
Well, specifically, the term time is brain was coined by Dr. Camilo Gomez back in 1993. He modified his position several years ago in 2018 when he said, quote, "It is no longer reasonable to believe that the effect of time on the ischemic process represents an absolute paradigm. It is increasingly evident that the volume of injured tissue within a given interval after the estimated time of onset shows considerable variability in large part due to the beneficial effect of a robust collateral circulation," end quote.
Yeah, and we have never had high quality evidence to support the position that treating stroke patients earlier was better. All we had was an association. Because there were no randomized control trials that randomized stroke patients into getting thrombolytics early or late. This means that there could have been some unmeasured confounders responsible for any of the observed effects.
Well, I guess the largest placebo-controlled RCT looking at TPA for acute ischemic stroke was the IST-3, which I think you guys covered several years ago in 2013, I think, on the Skeptic's Guide to EM number 29. And in there were several serious problems with that trial, including one is largely unblinded up to 91%. It was stopped early, unknown reasons from that standpoint. And then it was also self-reported outcome by both telephone and mailed questionnaires. There was no superiority for the primary outcome. And then also, lastly, the 4% absolute increase in early mortality.
Well, another interesting point about the IST3 is the subgroup analysis did not support the claim that time was brain. There was no statistical difference between the three subgroups, the under 3 hours, the 3 to 4.5 hours, and those treated in over 4.5 hours. However, the point estimate favored TPA in under 3 hours, but then the placebo in 3 to 4.5 hours, and then if patients were treated after 4.5 hours, then it went back to being superior with TPA? And you also need to look very carefully at the figure to see that they used a 99% confidence interval instead of the standard 95% confidence interval. And so me, being the uber nerd that I am, and skeptic, I actually went and calculated the odds ratio for the 3 to 4.5 hour group using the 95% confidence interval, which is the standard. And if you do that, guess what? You show a statistically significant difference favoring the placebo group.
So I was just going to say that by itself is a little concerning, so which leads to this.
Yeah, so what's the clinical question we're going to try to answer on today's podcast?
So really, the question is, does a mobile stroke unit with early imaging and delivery of TPA improve outcomes, or is the downstream effect of improved resources at a comprehensive stroke center that improves outcomes for the patients with strokes?
And what's the reference that you have for this?
So we're going to be talking using Fatema and Alls from the International Journal of Stroke 2020, entitled Mobile Stroke Unit versus Standard Medical Care and the Management of Patients with Acute Stroke, a Systematic Review and Meta-Analysis.
All right, let's run through the PICO. What was the population?
This was a systematic research that found 11 articles that were either randomized controlled trials, RCTs, retrospective or prospective studies that compared the clinical outcomes among patients treated in either a mobile stroke unit or either through conventional care, standard medical care for the acute stroke.
Yeah, and they excluded studies that were case control studies, case series, and case reports. What was the intervention they were looking at?
The mobile stroke unit, that is a specialized ambulance equipped with a CT scanner, and most of those are a 16-slice CT scanner. The newer ones, the older ones were 8-slice CT, just for a little historical background from that standpoint. Also looking at point-of-care laboratory, and thrombolysis is started immediately within the mobile stroke unit.
And what did they compare it to?
Conventional care that consists of transferring the patient to the emergency department or specialized stroke centers and giving thrombolysis in the hospital according to the imaging report.
All right, let's run through their outcomes. What was their primary outcomes?
The first one was neurologic outcome as defined by the modified Rankin scale, MRS, score at day 7 and day 1 post-treatment. With good neurologic outcome was a modified Rankin scale of 0 to 2, while a poor neurologic outcome was a modified Rankin scale of 3 to 6.
And how about their secondary outcomes?
All-cause mortality, stroke-related neurologic death, and then other adverse events, and then finally, the mean time improvement in gains.
All right, so the author's conclusions were, quote, "Our results corroborate that patients treated in mobile stroke unit leads to short-term recovery following acute stroke without influencing the mortality rate. Further prospective studies are needed to validate our results," end of quote. All right, so we have a quality checklist for therapeutic systematic reviews, and it includes 7 questions. You ready to run those 7 questions through?
Let's hit it.
Let's do it. All right, first question. Do you think that the clinical question is sensible and answerable?
Reading through the information, I basically have to say I'm unsure. While it's important to know what the impact is at day 1 and day 7, would be more useful to know if this translates into a good outcome at 3 to 6 months, which tends to be the usual time frame for any of our thrombolysis studies.
All right, question number two, the search for the studies, was it detailed and was it exhaustive?
It appeared to be. I mean, they actually went through looking at over 900 articles and then broke it down further through, which I know we'll talk more onto that.
Okay, the third question, the primary studies, were they of high methodological quality?
The issue here is no. If you look at it, they included 7 randomized controlled trials and 4 observational studies. If you look at the RCTs, none of these were blinded.
And that's such an important part of a quality checklist. The ingredients, right? The included studies that went into the systematic review. How good were the primary studies? How about the assessment of the studies? Were they reproducible?
Yes, they were.
And how about the outcomes? Do you think that they were clinically relevant outcomes?
No. The primary outcomes of 7 days does not give long enough for follow-up to distinguish between the two groups.
And question 6, was there low statistical heterogeneity for the primary outcome?
No. The I-square test for 7 days was 44%, and for 1 day, it was 29%.
And by the definition from the Cochrane Handbook, those two metrics, 44% and 29%, would not be considered low statistical heterogeneity. All right, the 7th and final question. The treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically relevant?
Once again, this goes into the unsure category. If you look at the information provided in this systematic review, it's predominantly from a single country, with Germany being the primary with that. We need more information on cost benefits, not just the 1 day and 7 day, but we need a 30, 60, 90-day modified Rankin scores. And then ultimately, what was the mortality rates?
All right, let's run through the results. 11 publications, 7 randomized control trials, and 4 observational studies were included in this systematic review and meta-analysis, with a total of over 21,000 patients. Now most, and what I mean by most, 97%, that's a pretty most, were from Germany. Now about a quarter were in the mobile stroke unit group, and about 3/4 were in the conventional care group. The mean age was 70 years of age, and the mean NIHSS score was 9.8 in the MSU group and 8.4 in the conventional care group. But what was the key result, Daniel?
Well, I think the key for this was better neurologic outcome was not observed at 1 day post-treatment, but there was a 7 day at the 7 day mark in patients treated by the mobile stroke unit compared to the conventional care group.
So let's dig into those numbers a bit. For the primary outcomes, that first primary outcome, that was good neurologic outcome at day 7, what did they find?
So there was good neurologic outcome at day 7 with an odds ratio of 1.46, and this was statistically significant.
Yeah, and that favored the MSU group. But when you looked at what was included in that primary outcome, only 1 of the randomized control trials and 2 of the observational studies. So total of 3 out of 11 studies. And 1/4 of the patients came from the randomized control trials, whereas 3/4 of the patients came from the observational studies. And the total N was nowhere near 21,000 patients. It was under 1,000 patients included, an order of magnitude less. How about the second primary outcome?
Was looking at having good neurologic outcome on day 1, which only gave us an odd ratio of 1.18, which, again, for this one, was unfortunately not statistically significant.
And even less people were in this. They had a total of only 758 patients. 1 randomized control trial contributed to it, which was 16% of the data, and 1 observational study was in that summary statistic, contributing 84% of the data. How about all the secondary outcomes?
There was no statistically difference in mortality, stroke-related death, or other serious adverse events. Patients were treated within 13 minutes faster using the mobile stroke unit compared to the conventional care group, which was statistically significant.
So out of all the secondary outcomes, the only thing that was statistically different was the fact that you got treated 13 minutes faster in the mobile stroke unit group compared to the conventional care group, correct?
That is correct.
You know what? It's time to talk nerdy then. That's enough results. Let's talk nerdy. And we've got 5 points to go through. And I'm going to give you the first point.
So, and talk about the external validity of this article. It looks like the majority, 97%, of the patients included in the systematic review were from Germany. Europe has a different pre-hospital system than North America. Just to give a little bit of background, you actually have Britain and America have the Anglo-Britain type system. And then elsewhere, there's the Franco-German system, which a lot of those actually have physicians on board versus here in America or Britain, where we have our pre-hospital providers, paramedics. So it is a completely different system from that standpoint. So also, it is unclear if these results could be applied to our practice here in America, Canada, and likewise. If you're only looking at the 618 patients out of the 21,297 patients that were from studies done in the United States.
Yeah, so you had just over 600 patients out of that 21,000 patient cohort that were patients from the U.S. So external validity certainly comes up. The second nerdy point we wanted to talk about was GIGO. And this is the concept of garbage in, garbage out. It means that if you combine observational studies, which are of lower methodological quality, with higher quality randomized control trials, and then you mash them up into a meat grinder, it does not spit out an answer that gets you any closer to the quote-unquote truth. A case could be made for whether it was even appropriate to meta-analyze some of the data. The secondary outcomes of time to scan and time to treatment all had I-squared tests of heterogeneity of 99%. So you're not talking apples and oranges at that point. You're talking like apples and bagels. I mean, while they did appropriately use the random effects model for the analysis, that level of heterogeneity, it would be reasonable to suggest that the data shouldn't have been combined.
Well, I mean, if you actually look at the primary outcomes, there are only three studies that were meta-analyzed for the 7-day result, and more than 3/4 of the data came from two observational studies. The heterogeneity was also moderate at a 44% using the I-squared metric. It was even worse for the 1-day outcome, where there are only 2 studies included, with more than 80% of the data coming from the 1 observational study.
Yeah, and Daniel, I grew up on an apple farm, and I have to tell you, to make a great apple pie, you need great ingredients. And a cow pie is something that comes out of the back of a cow, and when it lands on the ground, it's about the size of a pie. Now, if you take a cow pie and add it to an apple pie, it does not make the apple pie taste any better. So combining lower quality observational studies to randomized control trials does not increase my confidence in the results.
Point number 3 in our talk a little nerdy is dealing with the primary outcome. They had 2 primary outcomes, and the SGM listeners know.
There can be only one
primary outcome. However, the outcomes were at 1 and 7 days post-treatment. This is a very short time frame for stroke studies. Usually the primary outcomes for thrombolytics use in acute ischemic stroke studies is at 3 and 6 months, We know from the NINS trial done in 1995 that there was not a difference in neurologic outcome at 24 hours.
I really like how you really sold that movie reference to Highlander. Very well done, Daniel. You are earning your way back onto a second episode of the S-Gem. All right, let's get to nerdy point number four, though. Misleading. While the study did include over 20,000 patients, less than 1,000 were meta-analyzed for the two primary outcomes. So if you were just reading the abstract, if you weren't the skeptic like I am, and you just scanned the abstract, you go, oh, look, they got 11 trials, they had over 20,000 patients, and then you'd get this impression from this summary statistic, this odds ratio of good neurologic outcome applied to the 20,000 patients, when really it was more than an order of magnitude less. There was less than 1,000 patients in those primary outcomes. So I felt that that was a bit misleading.
Our fifth and final talk a little nerdy is actually dealing with the cost. This is an important aspect to consider, specifically in this day and age when we're in the trillions of dollars and deficits, health cares and all that stuff, where the mobile stroke units are a much more expensive to buy with the initial startup price tag around $1 million for the ambulance, CT scanners, and all that stuff. And then you have to look at the operating side of it, the cost of having a critical care paramedic, having a critical care nurse, having a CT tech. And some of these ambulances even have a fourth individual, just a driver, their own little chauffeur getting them around town. Then you have to clump in the neurologist who's on standby to review the head CTs versus the regular type ambulances. If we do not have high quality evidence that giving thrombolytics 13 minutes earlier makes a poo, or that patient-oriented outcome that you like to talk about all the time, a difference, then the expense cannot be justified.
Well, Daniel, it's even worse than that. We do not have high quality evidence that TPA is superior to placebo. I mean, out of the 8 foundational randomized control trials on this issue, only 2 out of the 8 claimed benefit for their primary outcome. That was NINS Part 2 and ECAS 3. Now, neither of these trials was ever replicated, and both of those trials have been reanalyzed and failed to confirm superiority of TPA for acute ischemic stroke. So should we be spending lots and lots of money and resources to deliver a drug faster that we are still unsure if it even works? But that's enough nerdiness. It's time to comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the S-Gem's conclusions.
We would amend the conclusions to say that weak evidence provides mixed results on mobile stroke units being associated with better short-term outcomes, while no statistical difference was observed in mortality rates. Further, high-quality results would only help clarify questions around the utility of the mobile stroke unit.
So, Daniel, you're just going to have to give us an S-Gem bottom line.
At this time, we cannot recommend the use of a mobile stroke unit based on the available evidence.
Well, what happened to that patient? What was the resolution to the case?
The man was taken to the closest stroke center and is worked up for his acute ischemic stroke.
And so how would you take this systematic review and meta-analysis and apply it clinically in your practice situation?
Currently, right now, the evidence does not support local EMS agencies to purchase specialized ambulances with CT scanners to set up mobile stroke units.
So what are you going to tell the patient whose family member asked you a question about, you know, these CT scanners that were in the back of ambulances?
Basically, I'd be telling him, your partner appears to be having a stroke. There are some places that have these special ambulances with CT scanners. But right now, the evidence shows that people get treated a few minutes faster. However, we don't have good evidence those minutes makes any clinical difference.
If It's time to announce the Keener Contest winner. And last week's winner was... There was no winner. The correct answer was William Keuvenhoven, who is credited as the founder of modern CPR. What's the question this week?
So the question is, can you name the person that invented the first CT scanner?
Oh, okay. So I'm sure that they didn't invent it and put it in the back of an ambulance. But if you know the answer to this week's Keener Contest question, then send an email to thesjam@gmail.com. The first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. And I want to remind SJAM listeners that this free open access to medical education resource can be helped by your generous support. Now, the content will always be free, but if you want to earn some CME, we have CME accreditation now. So all you have to do is click on the link and you will be helping support FOMED resources and collecting some CME credits all at the same time. Well, thank you, Daniel, for coming on the SJAM and being a guest and providing your expertise from the EMS world.
And I want to say thank you for the opportunity for joining you and fellow skeptics on the discussion of the utility of the mobile stroke unit.
And now the most difficult part for some guest skeptics. I need you to read the tagline. But in your intro, I see that you bounced between Ohio and South Carolina. South Carolina, Ohio. So what accent are you going to slip into to give the SJAM tagline?
I've been here for 3 years now, so I think it's just in South Carolina, so I'm going to probably just be staying, you know, in that nice southern. Yeah, I can't quite get my southern bell accent on.
You do your best.
Remember to stay skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.